Chapter 27. Ing's Fortress. Hanmin led us into the keep through a small door that I didn't even notice until he held it open. It was hard to see what was beyond. Some sort of hall, barely illuminated by candles or something like. It was uncomfortable to have him holding the door for us, so we hustled through, Risa ducking under the lintel only to brain himself on the low ceiling inside. Hanmin shoved in behind us, closed the door, and said, "Ah, yes. Please accept my apologies, young man. Her house was built without her input, I fear. The masons built the place before I came here, so not really designed for a good child, I'm afraid." "I'm sorry, Lord Hanmin," I said. "A good child?" He smiled again. "You don't understand the significance?" "I'm afraid not." "Ah, well, you would probably need to know the origin of the name to get it."
"Good child," Risa said.
Hanmin smiled oddly, as if he hadn't expected Risa to say anything. Then he squeezed by us and walked down the hall. As we followed, I lowered my voice and said, "Be careful with that, Risa. The nobility are different to us. You must address them by title if you wish them not to be angry with you, and trust me, you really don't wish them to be angry. This one ahead of us is called Lord Hanmin. Can you say that? Lord Hanmin."
"Han-a-men. Hanmin. Lord Hanmin."
I winced when he said it. Risa never tried to speak loudly, he just did. I think it had something to do with the size of his chest. He could pull in so much air, and I really believe that in order to get any sound from it, he really had to push. On those times he did speak softly, it was like enormous trees falling very far away. You had to listen to him speak this way for a while sometimes before you could really understand what he said. He mispronounced the Lord's name very loudly, though, and we were in a small back passage, so we all heard him pretty clearly. I felt my heart seize, but Hanmin only stopped to laugh. It was a rich, honest sound, and I quickly relaxed as soon as I heard it. "Our apologies, my lord," I quickly said. "He is very young in his heart and still learning to speak." Hanmin had braced a hand against the wall, which was also stone. Everything in that fucking castle was stone. His back was to us, but his shoulders continued to hitch, and he finally said,
"No. Oh, bless you. Bless you all."
And here he said a thing I still don't understand. Sometimes I think I might understand it, but I've been screwed plenty of times for thinking I understood a thing when I really didn't. But when I learned more about Hanmin, this was later now, much later, I had to think back to some of the earlier times we talked. I started to realize when I did that many of the nonsensical things he said made sense, and that most of the time when you thought he was talking to you, he was really talking to himself. Or someone he thought was listening, I suppose. It is hard for me now to think back to many of the things he said in those early days, and so much of what he told me will remain a mystery. The bitch is that it'll remain a mystery because I can't remember the fucking words anymore, and he isn't around now to ask. But here's the next thing he said. I remember it very well, because he said two names so unfamiliar to me that they've stuck in my mind like letters burning in flame. Between his laughter, he said,
"Ah, Hanmin! Ah! Christ!"
We missed much of the keep that first time, because Hanmin conveyed us to our apartments mostly through the servants' passages. He might open a door. Sometimes I would even notice the door before he opened it. And then we would pop out of a wall somewhere into a larger room. The rooms of the keep were fabulous in all the ways that Ambrosius's halls were shabby, and I truly understood for the first time, now standing inside the fortress, how pathetic the impersonations of Ambrosius's kind really were. Dithmar's Halls. They will always be Dithmar's Halls to me, even if all he really did was capture the fortress long after it had been built. Seemed designed to make you feel small when you stood within them. The ceilings were all very high overhead, and the stonework was patterned in ways that made it seem as though we stood inside of a ribcage. All along the walls of each large room, there were massive columns large enough that if they'd been hollowed, an ox could have stood inside them comfortably. They climbed the walls to support the ceilings, and there they spread out like great webbed fingers that touched each other tip to tip at the ceiling's apex. Never in all my life had I stood inside a stone chamber that felt so much like a living creature, not even within the caverns of Erda's mountains, which we were taught from childhood are actually the bones of a living creature. Every room was magnificent. Tapestries hung over the walls, yet the word tapestry is such a poor, misguided thing. They were vast fields of fabric. I can scarcely imagine how long the artisans worked to create them, and the scenes they depicted were masterful, though I'm no real judge. The only thing I really could say when looking at them is if you laid two of them out in the dirt side by side, the space they consumed would have described enough crop area to feed a family until the soil ran fallow. Had I been born into the world with Risa at my side, and had I lived the crier's life from the first day I could speak until that moment, I would not have amassed enough fortune to purchase even one of those tapestries, and every chamber of that keep was covered in these things. We had no time to admire them, though. Hanman was always rushing ahead, diving through another door whether I saw it or not. Most of that little walk we took was through tight spaces full of shadow, where we saw only stone, oil candles, and an honest-to-goddamned army of servants bustling in every direction. Sometimes we emerged from the tight spaces into cavernous areas in which the air still felt impossibly close. Hanman once explained that the tapestries had something to do with it. Something about how sound has more to do with water than any of us realized, whatever that means. But we only caught little glimpses. Pretty soon he had us in another hallway, only this one was much larger than the others, with a ceiling high enough that Risa did not have to stoop. There were many more doors all along the length, on both sides of the hall. They were very visible, and I understood we were in a place meant to be seen by guests. I've arranged for adjoining apartments. Oh, you'll have to excuse me, there are only two. I was unaware you were traveling with a third. We all looked at Geffen, who seemed a little put out. Finally, he very carefully said, "No excuses are necessary, my lord. If it pleases you, I'll take one for myself. If I may suggest, Yander should probably share with Risa. They're quite close." Hanman was nodding as Geffen spoke, then smiled and even bowed, which shocked me stupid. "That was well managed, Geffen. Didn't know you had it in you." "My lord?" "Yes, of course. Please make yourself comfortable this way, Geffen. This is called the Chamber of the Lily. All of our rooms are so named, you see. Helps us all to find them. Risa and Yander, they'll be installed just here across the hall." Geffen bowed. He made a poor job of it, but Hanman didn't seem to mind. After Geffen passed beyond the door, Hanman nodded to the one opposing and said, "And now for you two, the Chamber of Bittersweet, if you please." I thought there was some sort of mistake when we entered. Perhaps it was another one of those enormous halls that we had to walk through, and our apartment was on the other side. But no. Over in the corner by the fireplace was a large bed. Large for me, Risa's legs would still dangle off the end, with a nice wide canopy. The why a canopy was required in a room with a stone ceiling is beyond me. There were many couches and chairs spread throughout the room, rich carpets nearly joining one wall to the other, a writing desk, and along the far wall a wash basin and mirror. I couldn't believe that mirror. I swear, the fucking nobles tossed wealth around like it was a sickness from which they needed to escape.
"I regret there is only one bed," Hanman began.
"Oh, my lord, no," I said without thought. I'd bet you could fit as many as 4 of my old houses inside this single room. Yet I'm unable. I cannot count that high. Hanman's mouth thinned in a way that reminded me of a yawning cat, and he said, No pretending here, Udo. I know how high you can count. I didn't understand how he could know such a thing, so I said only, My lord. And stop my lording me. Out in public, fine. Not in here, though, all right? Not when it's just us. Not... Why... Well, look. If you wish it. He rolled his eyes and sighed. Can we please be past the part where you stutter your way through to acceptance? Yes. Yes, I'm sorry. Good. I wonder if you'd do me a favor. Name it, Hanman, please. Would you say the word fuck for me? I must have stood there blinking like an idiot. I thought I was being tricked into incriminating myself in some way and was afraid to speak. It's quite all right, I assure you. Humor me, please, he said. All right. Fuck? He laughed. Very good. Yes, very good. I'm afraid I don't. No, of course not. I promise you it's so much simpler than you suspect. The truth is only that no one will use it in my presence, and it's such a shame. It is such a fun word. Well, if you like that, I have plenty more. No doubt, he grinned. It's... I'm sorry, I began. It is odd, though, right? Just that word? As I said, pay no heed. It's simply a word I enjoy. It's so damned nonsensical, don't you see? I was distracted by Risa as he explored the room. He seemed very taken by the tapestries hanging on the wall. One of them depicted a giantess wrapped head to toe in ivy, and the ivy grew from her hands and spread out over a vast field of fallen soldiers, intertwining them, until flowers sprouted from their bones. I don't know if I'd say nonsensical, I muttered. It's quite versatile. And this is what I mean. The word can mean anything. Therefore, it must mean nothing. Such wonderful utility. I find it an aspect of the language very much worth preserving, whether you people find it polite or no. He was standing at the door. I hadn't noticed him move toward it, but when I looked for him in the place he'd been standing, he was no longer there. He stood by the door, holding it open, and said, I will send some assistants to help you prepare for court. Time is too dear for full attire, obviously, but I think something can be found that... I was distracted by Risa again. He'd pulled the tapestry away from the wall and was looking behind it. I'm sorry, what do you mean, prepare for... Risa, don't! Don't touch that man! He's all right, Udo. Look at me now. When he spoke to you like that, resistance was beyond your ability. Yes? I apologize again. He only smiled, always so warm, always so cold. That's the second time you've responded to that name. If you're to insist on leaving it behind, you should not answer to it when people use it. Han, my lord, I stop. In fact, stop it all. We're not calling you Yander anymore. You are Udo. There is nothing wrong with Udo. It is who you are, and thus it is what you shall be called. Do you understand? I do. Thank you. Nonsense. Enjoy your servant. Then he left. I think a part of me noticed he was wearing gloves when he pulled that door shut, but... Mostly I just thought about what he'd said. She was very small, and even now I haven't decided if she was sent as a temptation or a torment. It was her smallness that first struck me, that stays with me now. I've said before that I'm not tall, yet she stood barely to my sternum. Her face was attractive, but somehow plain, with a forgettable nose, lips thinner than I preferred, and flat eyes that betrayed nothing. Her breasts were rather small, and because of her height, there wasn't much leg to admire either. It all worked on her, though. It worked, somehow, and the thick, curling mass of wheat-colored hair spilling around her shoulders drew you in until you were lost. I was doing all right for a while. She came in, introduced herself, and now I can't even recall her name, damn me. Engaged in abrupt conversation that made me feel as though we had all the time in the world to chat. Had I enjoyed my trip to Colmar? I hadn't. And was this my first time seeing the great capital city? It wasn't. And what did I think of the keep? It's pretty big. But then she got down on her knees right in front of me. She didn't warn me or anything, just right down there on the rug in front of Risa and everything, and stifled laughter behind her hand when I grabbed onto my breeches and danced away from her hands. She produced a length of string maybe twice as long as I am tall. It had knots tied into it at regular intervals, and when she held it up to me with a wry smile, I understood she intended to measure me with it. So then she started measuring me with it. It was pretty great at first, until I began to respond to her. Then it was horrible. Her face was right there next to my cock, and all I could think about were those lips, and how they'd looked so thin and plain at first, but now looked soft and wonderful, and how sometimes her tongue would show between her lips as she counted off knots.
Are you all right, my lord?
I am no lord, I said. You must never call me that.
What do you prefer to be called?
Her voice was like hot breath on the back of your neck. It was terribly distracting. Udo, I guess.
You guess?
Udo. Udo gets it done.
I understand. And are you all right, Udo?
Excellent.
You're sure?
I glanced at the top of her head and looked away. You're not?
You've been staring at yourself in that mirror since I've begun working on you. You're not nervous, are you? If this is your first time at court, I can understand, but you mustn't be so. Mostly it's a lot of people standing around and bowing, trying to impress each other with their wit, trying to show each other how favored they are by our king and his advisors. If you are not a lord, as you say,
I am not.
Then you haven't any cause to vie for position. Say little, nod when nodded to, and answer any questions simply and directly.
Thanks. Yeah, that sounds pretty good. Thank you.
And your eyebrow?
She giggled. Now I looked down at her, having forgotten temporarily her fantastic mouth. What about it? She worked very hard not to laugh, but the task seemed an impossible one for her.
Forgive me. The arching? It isn't necessary. Your face is quite handsome without the theatrics.
Handsome? I looked again at myself in the mirror. The crooked, bulbous nose, the wart that lived on my left eyelid, the enormous and oafish ears. My teeth looked more like the bones of some dead creature rotted down to nothing in the woods, and my body looked as though it had been broken apart on a wheel and patched back together by an incompetent. Maybe one of Ambrosius's bakers. She'd gotten control of herself when she said,
"Just smile honestly. An honest smile is always best."
"I think your eyes must be failing you," I muttered. She stood and moved around to my back. She lifted my arms, then pressure along my shoulders as she conveyed me into a chair. Her breath really was on my neck now, and it was as warm and soft as I'd imagined. She leaned in close to an ear. I shuddered to imagine the hair growing around it brushing against her cheek, and whispered,
"I have all that I need. We'll find some clothes for you shortly, that should do. Was there anything else I could help you with?"
"Something else?"
"Send the giant across the hall to your friend."
Her fingers curled up in the hair along the back of my neck. You don't need to measure him?
"Pointless. We have nothing to fit him."
She whispered, always whispered. I thought about that mouth. That wonderful fucking mouth. Then I thought about other things. Were you born in Colmar? I asked.
Was I? Yes.
Where?
Oh, well, we lived on River Street along Ditmars Canal.
No.
No?
She asked. Her hands went away, and I was grateful. It was much easier to think when they were gone. No. Your R's aren't right. They soften them more in that district, or they did when I was here. She came around to where I could see her. Her cheeks were flushed. It was very pretty on her, and I almost lost my train of thought, but her attitude had changed quite a bit. It made it all much easier. She began.
I assure.
No, you didn't come from River Street. If you had, you'd have called it Christoph's Canal.
It has been Ditmars since I was born.
Oh. Well, then you're even younger than I thought. Ditmars or Christoph's, you're not from there. No, you came up somewhere in the Warrens. It's on you, everywhere. I can hear it in your voice and smell it on your skin. Her face went very pale as I spoke, so I hastened to say, you needn't worry. The act is quite good. The only people you won't be able to fool are people who came up in the Warrens, and you won't find any of them here in the keep. Well, mostly you won't find them here.
You came up on the cobbles?
She whispered this, but the whisper was very different from the way she whispered into my ear. Now she whispered as if she was terrified she would be heard, even by me. I did. I nodded. Don't be afraid. I remember. Keep your mouth and your business in the Warrens. Warrens for the Warrens. You're safe. They won't learn anything about you from me. She looked at me a while. I guess she was working it all out. Maybe working out how fellow cobble scum had ended at a station so highly removed from her own. I don't know.
Did you want... anyway?
Huh?
I was given instructions like... supposed to... eh?
Oh. Well, I'm sorry, but... that... that's a distinct impossibility.
You don't prefer men? Saw your cock trying to drive a hole through my head and all?
No, I... look, it can't happen, all right.
They're probably to beat me, then?
She said sadly. No. Stay here a while, then mess your top locks round a bit so she's all fuckered. Next time I see the Hetman, I'll tell him goods was cherry. Then she smiled at me, and it was finally true. I resumed looking at myself in the mirror, like a buffoon. Someone covered head to foot in ridiculous garments came to collect me and Risa not long after the seamstress left. I don't know what his name was either, and based on what he thought was acceptable attire, I'm probably glad I don't remember. I didn't like him at all. He took me and Risa to the audience hall through passages different to what Hanman had used, and I saw much more of the keep that time. It was still pretty impressive on the second tour, but it was hard to really see any of it, because the idiot in the ridiculous clothing simply would not shut the fuck up about anything we happened to pass. Every little thing had its own unique story, sometimes dating back hundreds of years, and he wanted to recount every detail. Finally, I told him to explain it all on the return trip, or we'd have to get Ditmar to reschedule his audience we'd be delayed so long. He stopped speaking to me after that, and was consequently far more pleasant to be around. It was just the three of us, me, Risa, and the ridiculously dressed asshole, and I wondered if Geffen had been collected separately. When we reached the audience hall, I looked over all the heads in the room. We came in through the back, and everyone else was facing toward the throne. Two or three times, before deciding that Geffen wasn't there. It made me nervous. I was afraid he'd been taken back to the barracks or something. No one in the room noticed our arrival, I think. They were all staring at the throne, as I said. So I pulled Risa over to stand along the far wall and concentrated on occupying as little space as possible. Then everyone fidgeted like children while waiting for the king to arrive. When he did, someone blew a bunch of horns. The crowd sighed, then clapped, and then spent a lot of time rearranging their garments after clapping. I could sympathize. I wasn't dressed as stupidly as they were. The selection of clothing had been limited after all. but I was still clad in far more fabric than I was used to. There were all these extra fucking pieces that had to be attached, about 100 more buttons than were necessary, extra layers that tried to suffocate the life out of you. I felt bad for those pompous assholes. I couldn't help it. The things they had to wear were horrible. Then the king came out, followed by many advisors. I didn't know it at the time, but it was not all of his advisors. I learned later there were more stationed across the ocean on the shores of Valhaz. His general, who most of us called Gerald the Mad, and many others I soon forgot. But I didn't recognize many in the audience chamber. Hanman was up there. I noted him well enough. But then there was Balduvinus, Dittmar's pet engineer. And though I'd heard the name, it was my first time seeing him in person. He looked like a man you wouldn't trust to milk a goat, let alone engineer anything at all. And yet word was that the water wheels that lined the Ruhr outside of Colmar were all his design. He was to me a very strange man. He wore long dark robes and a strange kind of hat I'd never seen before, a thing that was intended to be seen rather than be useful. He had a puffy, jowly face with squishy, puckered lips and a hawk's beak of a nose. And despite the fact that he was so hairy you could see the fur creeping out of his collar and sleeves, he still struck me as being very feminine. I tried to look at some of the others, but my eyes were always drawn back to him. I didn't realize why at first, but then I watched him a few moments and understood. He was just a twitchy son of a bitch. His fingers were constantly twiddling. He was always bugging his eyes out like a fish if he wasn't slamming them closed. I'm not kidding. When he blinked, it was like he was trying to trap insects in mid-flight. His lips, which looked horrible, were always smacking, and he had some sort of compulsion to blow little puffs of air through them, sometimes only a little. But then sometimes something would really set the bastard off, and then you had to sit through him blowing puff after puff, over and over. Just this sad little mud fart of a sound, like and if that wasn't enough, he was always shaking his head around when he did it, as if he was trying to say no. Only he wasn't. He was just having some sort of almighty fucking fit. Constantly, whenever you saw him, no matter when, he was always locked in the throes of that fucking fit. Hanman told me once that being an engineer, Balduvinus worked with many harmful substances. He said it had something to do with quicksilver, which I'd heard of, but still have never seen. It has never been explained to me why something like quicksilver would turn an otherwise intelligent man into a fumbling asshole. But then there are many things I don't understand, as I think I've said before. There were some others up there next to Dittmar, but Balduvinus was so damned distracting I only noted a few. One of them had a gold chain draped around his right arm, so I guessed he must have been the treasurer. And then there was the obvious priest of Godin, wearing a habit apparently designed to rival the color and expense of Dittmar's attire. Finally, Dittmar's queen, Osana, sat the lesser throne on his left, and noticing how disinterested she appeared to be, I saw that the princes were also conspicuously absent. I wondered if they had sailed south as well. Osana sure looked like she would like to follow them, assuming they had. Then they went through a bunch of nonsense I won't even pretend to have followed. Many of the ridiculously dressed people at the court took turns bothering Dittmar with concerns of great import to them. And yet I'll be damned to oblivion if I can recall a single item. I think that was the first time I ever felt pity for the king. I always had this idea that the king could do whatever he wanted and that no one could stop him. And yet as I stood there, he looked as much a prisoner as I. He was a handsome man, nearly as handsome as Hanman, and I damned well know he was younger than me, but honestly, there was something very old about him as he sat that throne and listened to everyone else festoon him in their shit. He seemed bowed somehow, and at times he would swipe at his face. When he did, the tremor in his hands was very apparent. They kept coming at him, the ridiculously dressed people, and he seemed to bend more under each assault. Sometimes Hanman would lean in close to whisper something, and Dittmar would sit up again, look strong again. But then the court came at him once more, and he seemed to shrink within himself. I could not tell if the man was demoralized or monumentally bored. When they started discussing his navy, Dittmar finally came to life. He sat up straight when they told him the shipbuilding was behind schedule. He commanded the creation of more wheels, and the way in which he delivered the command told me those wheels would damned well be built. Then there was the theft of food along the coast. Theft perpetrated by our own countrymen rather than the raiders from Valhaz. The king was actually up and pacing when this news was delivered. I saw that the tremor in his hands had disappeared, and thought he should probably walk around more often. But then he spoke. "Be it known," he commanded, "that any man, woman, or child found to be stealing food in our country shall be press-ganged into service without pay." His voice crashed like iron gates slamming shut, and the sounds in that chamber died abruptly. There were a few youthful folk in there who might not remember, but most of us were old enough to have heard about Gerald the Mad and his calloused bastards. Some of them had probably even seen the bastards in action, and my understanding at the time was that you did not want to see them in action ever. Later in Valhaz, I learned this to be very true. I was thinking of the stories I'd heard, of the extermination of Petrin's lads, and of the silence of that chamber, when Dittmar spoke again. "Is that Hanman? Is this he? Why have we not been informed?" "I do apologize, sire. It has been a busy day. I'm sure it's slipped my mind entirely." "It won't do, Hanman." "Of course, you are right, my king. Corrections shall be made." "See, it is so," Dittmar muttered. He'd stepped down from his platform and was coming straight at me. The ridiculously dressed people scurried out of his path. If they weren't quick enough, he fanned them out of the way with a hand, at which point their faces all ran bone white and they nearly fell over each other trying to get out of the way. He came straight at me, indomitable. I held my breath and braced for impact. But then he was standing in front of Risa, face to belly, looking up at him with a smile wide enough for two faces. I think I might have noticed the gasps of the ridiculously dressed people when they finally saw Risa, but honestly, all I really saw was Dittmar's eyes bearing down on us. They were as wild as shattered glass. "He is magnificent," Dittmar gasped.
"Risa,"
the giant stated. "Sire. Risa, say sire, or my king, or King Dit." The king looked at me as though I'd shit all over his rug and asked, "Someone tell us who this is." Hanman seemed to appear at Dittmar's back. "My king, this is Udo. We discussed him before, you'll recall." "This being the man? The one who has been caring for and protecting, you remember, my king?" His voice had gone very quiet and fast at the end, but he was standing close enough for me to hear. Dittmar's smile was as sudden as his scowl. It put me off balance, as if he'd slapped me and then kissed me immediately after.
"Of course he is. Udo, you must excuse me. The affairs of the crown. You'll understand, I'm sure, how the details."
I wanted to interrupt him, to tell him it was insane for me to excuse a king, but I knew good and goddamned well to shut my mouth while he was talking. He never finished the sentence, though. It seemed like he was waiting for me to finish it for him, so after a few beats of silence, I said,
Of course.
"Oh, my noble king." I bowed a lot here. Probably would have kissed his prick if he told me to.
"You needn't. Please don't."
I was bowed so low I had to turn my head sideways to look up at him.
My king?
"Please don't, Udo. Not like the rest of them. I can't take it." I stood up slowly. Very cautiously. The feeling that you're being fucked with is a hard thing to leave behind when you've spent your whole life growing accustomed to it.
"I understand, my king."
He leaned close enough for me to smell the mint on his breath and whispered, "In here, yes, by all means, you're expected to my king me to death. None of the rest, though. I'm very fond of what you and Risa represent. I shouldn't be able to bear it if you turned out to be the same brand of cunt I'm forced to treat with every day." I laughed. I couldn't help myself. I don't think I could have held that laugh if my life had been at stake. Dittmar laughed as well. I saw that Hanman was there behind the king, hiding his own smile. I did not mind it so much when the tears of relief blurred my vision. Dittmar turned away as I composed myself and addressed the court. Look well, all of you. He took Risa by the hand and led him from the shadows into the center of the chamber, where they could all get a nice, long look at the giant. They looked strange to me as they walked out there. Dittmar pulled Risa along behind him. I even had to wave a hand at Risa to let him know it was okay to go. Dittmar leading. And yet as I watched them, it seemed to me that Risa did the leading, as if he carefully led a frail old man. Which was preposterous. You could see Dittmar's strength in the breadth of his shoulders, in the thickness of his hair, in the power of his voice. When he commanded, it was as though Godin himself was speaking, and most times it was all we could do to resist running off like eager children. But his hands trembled. This much could not be hidden, nor could it be hidden how terribly the light hurt his eyes. Look, you all. Look well on this man, this giant. He is the pinnacle, the very apex of our people, the Teodiscan race. Sent to us by Tyr himself, the very son of the war god. His name is Risa, a wonderfully apt name. And he has now come to serve the greatness of our people. They all cheered. That's always what you do when the king is excited. The stupid ones do not cheer, but they sure don't manage it for very long. I think Dittmar may have said more, but I missed it. Hanman was at my shoulder whispering to me again. If anyone should ask, do not discuss where you found Risa. Say only as our king has stated here and nothing more. Later, we shall all decide together what is really true.